Been a while since we had a chance to chat. Since the end of last season, we have not had you on the program. Now that you have, you know, you put together what you think is as good a team as you can garner during the course of the off season, and now in the spring, you start to get a sense of what you have sown. Give me your take on your initial look at this team for this year.
It's been, again, I think after so many years, you exercise extreme caution going through spring training into not making spring evaluations. One of the first, wise older baseball guys I was around once told me what blooms in the spring wilts in the summer. So you're careful. But with a veteran team like ours, I think you're just looking for one, health. Two, you're looking for attitude, and it's been a very spring training full of both positive energy, purposeful practice, and intent. Our guys are going about their business in a way with a sense of purpose, which I think is what you want. You've got veteran guys like Tulo and JD and Kevin Pillar that are talking about what it's going to take for our team to continue to get better and improve. You've got another veteran guy like Kendrys Morales just mixing right in, welcomed, and making an impact right away. So I think I feel about how I would have hoped I'd feel, which is if we stay healthy, we've got a very talented, high-character, cohesive group of guys that want to win, which is extremely important and is not a given. And that have high expectations of themselves.
You have preached a collective mentality, utilizing all the resources, the brain power within your organization to make decisions. So it's not Mark Shapiro deciding things. It's not even your general manager deciding things on a singular platform. It's a collective. I think people would be intrigued by the process now that you're at spring training and you have to put together a 25-man roster. And we know that most of the positions are predetermined.
Right, right.
But there's going to be one or two, maybe three, right, that you're going to have to make a decision on. Who has the final say on those decisions?
Well, again, I let's walk through the process rather than the final say, because I think if your process is good, there's not much debate when you get to the final decision that you make. So I think, the one thing you want to do is prior to coming into spring training, before emotion and momentum can start to impact decisions, you want to kind of define the criteria. So in our case, a couple of bullpen spots, maybe one bench spot. You're thinking about, what is your best options to both get through a whole season? What are the criteria you're looking for to define those spots? What are you going to be evaluating? What are you going to be looking for? What complements the team? What's the past track record of individual players? And then you're getting a range of opinions. If it's players we haven't been around before, you're certainly talking to the staff to get an understanding of their work ethic, what kind of teammates they are, how they're mixing in the clubhouse. Same thing with the high performance staff, how committed are they to doing things necessary to maximizing their performance and staying on the field. And then obviously we've got scouts, people like Tony LaCava, that have just a wealth of experience subjectively watching the games and offering their evaluations on guys. So it's a fluid process that you're talking about as you go through spring training. And the easier those decisions are, Bob, the better chance we have of making the right decision, because it means it's becoming more clear to everyone what the right decisions are. The more you're agonizing over them, it means that you're probably trying to fit someone in. Or I guess best case scenario, you've got multiple great choices, and then flexibility kind of enters into it. Who has options? Who can go to AAA based on the what the collective bargaining agreement allows?
Park.
And how far down the road would statistics enter into your thing? Because I remember every year when I went to spring training, Mitch Webster would hit about 640, and then he'd be the last cut every year. So
I would say statistics matter, but more past statistics of prior years than what they do in spring training. So performance, I think what you're trying to do is you want to regress out that the recent performance so that it doesn't disproportionately impact the decision. That's the easiest way to describe it to you, that we all have biases that enter in, and when you see a guy perform really well over a 3-4 week period in a situation where, frankly, a pitcher's not game planning him, or a hitter's are not necessarily you know, trying to do the same things in each at bat, you can really be misled. So you want to look at the total body of work, not just the 3 to 4 weeks that you see down here.
Sure. And one other one, I remember when the Indians were in Winter Haven and then they went out to Arizona. Now you've been out there, now you're back east. Compare the two, for a guy running a ball team.
Yeah.
How is Arizona compared to Florida for you?
Arizona is a much tougher evaluative, environment. Really tough on pitchers. They have a hard time gripping the baseball with no humidity, spinning breaking balls, not a lot of breaking balls. Hard to evaluate outfield defense. Extremely dry, cooler air. The real advantage to Arizona probably comes in just the work that's done, that, you're not spending 4 or 5 hours in a car. You're spending 20 minutes, 45 minutes. You're almost always getting your batting practice and your work in at home. And there are so many days here where, that we're on the road an hour and a half each way, 3 hours, 4 hours total. So players, during that time, some of their work is impacted. I think Florida has great advantages in the comfort level for Latin American players. I do think the weather here and the environment here is more conducive to preparing for a major league season. And even the fact that we get some bad weather here, and we usually didn't get that in Arizona, and we're off the field a day or two, is probably actually good for the recovery when you're talking about guys jumping right in. I think that would sum it up, Dave, that, the convenience out there, the proximity of clubs, the ease of kind of getting the games from a work perspective was an extreme advantage. Everything else kind of tilts in the favor of Florida in my eyes.
With the president and CEO of the Blue Jays, Mark Shapiro. So I don't think I'm going out on a limb and saying that there are two real areas of concern. Debate as to who survives. I was going to say concern, but let's say debate.
We'll call it concern.
Left field and the bullpen. I mean, there are candidates for both of those areas, and you're going to have to make some decisions come the end of spring training. What's the criteria you use to make those kinds of decisions? Is it entirely an eye test?
No, I mean, I think you're factoring in what's the best decision for the length of the season, not just for, breaking camp. You're factoring in, health and, durability, alternatives and options of guys that can still be depth for you in AAA, where you can make adjustments, where you might not be able to make adjustments if you make a decision. In other words, if you make a decision and you release a player, that's a decision you cannot reverse, right? But if you make a decision and give a veteran player an extra, opportunity, you can still adjust during the season by bringing a younger player back. So I think you're always looking to improve, always looking to get better, monitoring the available players out there, talking about trades. In those cases, the left field picture is, has got obviously veteran options in Upton Carrera and Steve Pearce when he's ready to play the outfield. We also have guys like Dalton Pompey and Darryl Siciliani who have played well, younger guys like Anthony Alford and Harold Ramirez that are coming and really encouraging. So much like, the bullpen for sure, you really don't – I think you want to take the first month or two of the season to evaluate. You're going to have some areas where – you course adjust as you go. What you want to make sure is you have alternatives and options to course adjust. Out trade is certainly one, but the internal ones are the best. And I think, of all the things that have happened in spring training, the depth of spring training arms out of the bullpen may be one of the better stories. There's been a few, but that's been one of the better stories.
Now, Mark, I'm an old cynic or whatever I am, but I look down at this. Your third baseman's been on the field once or twice. Your shortstop's been out there a couple of times. Your second baseman hasn't been out there at all. Pearce, who I think is going to be a valuable guy, he can't throw. He hasn't been out there yet. We don't really know much about left field. I mean, do you have a little bit of concern about the time ticking away?
I think I completely understand why anyone that's not here would, but I have none. As of right now, and that's a day-to-day thing because every single guy that you just mentioned is progressing at or ahead of what our expectations were. So, you know, going around the diamond, Tulo is exactly where he planned to be and where we planned him to be based on his age, his experience, a longer spring training than usual because of the WBC. You know, Devin is right on schedule. He's the only guy who's not ahead of schedule. He may be, you know, has been reported a little behind opening day, but he has not had any setbacks and has not had a bad day and continues to progress. You know, Josh Donaldson actually wanted to kind of do what Tulo's doing, and the calf, you know, certainly delayed that, but he is, you know, probably a little bit ahead of schedule in his return. So, you know, in each case, and Pierce is at or ahead of schedule as well. So in each case, we're where we need to be, if not ahead. However, it does create some frustration. And I think, you know what, Dave, the one thing that will be a little bit of a concern is that you want to see your team together on the field the last, you know, couple weeks of spring training, and the way things are going for us, it could be the last week that we get our whole team together on the field at one time.
Look, I'm not short on opinions on things, and I think your bullpen will sort itself out, and I think you've got enough, you brought in enough candidates with experience that you'll figure that out. And left field will determine itself regardless of the four or five candidates that are out there. You'll figure that one out. But the one area that I guess I'm the only one who talks about, and that's first base, and I'm not particularly comfortable with the choice, the preseason choice to be there. And I like this Rowdy Tellez guy, and I've seen nothing or heard nothing about his performance in spring training to suggest that he isn't a legitimate candidate for that job. What does this kid have to do? Or are you committed, because he's 21 years old, to have him play another year or a good portion of it in the minors?
Well, I would never commit beyond the start of the season, but absolutely committed at 21 years old, never having had a AAA at bat, to him going to AAA. I think, you know, those are the kinds of decisions when you make them based on spring training and even based on a AA season, you know, that, you know, shortchange the foundation you pay for, because, you know, you're trying to, you know, rush the performance. If Rowdy Tellez goes to AAA and has, you know, 200 outstanding at-bats and starts dominating there, and we have a gap of performance at the major league level, you can bet he's going to enter into the conversation of alternatives to improve the club there. But, you know, being a little antsy, you know, making decisions based on expecting challenges before they actually occur, and rushing someone's development before they have a strong foundation in place, I think the player development process is all about a guy going through both the ups and downs of the minor league process and learning, you know, how to become his own coach, learning what makes him successful, what he does when he struggles, and what he does when he's successful, and developing those routines and those resources that help him be the best player he can be. And it's a hard transition to the major league level, no matter what. Very few guys do it without going back. You know, I think what's most important is in a championship environment with those expectations and standards in place, that a guy be as prepared as he can possibly be before he gets thrown into that mix.
Do you subscribe to the theory that in the best case scenario, you don't send a kid back? In other words, that bringing him up, having him fail on a short-term basis, and then sending him back down to AAA is a harmful, or at least potentially harmful, exercise?
It's a great question. I don't necessarily think it's a harmful exercise. I think it.
Me either.
I think in some cases it's a natural part of the process, that in order for a guy to ultimately make that final adjustment, sometimes he needs to come up and see just what that gap is between AAA and the big leagues. Because let me tell you, it's a big gap. And then he's not going to be able to make that adjustment because he's just trying to survive at the major league level. So he needs to go back to Buffalo, make the adjustment that then prepares him to succeed in the big leagues. I'd like to give a guy every chance possible to be able to come and stay. But I think you have to accept the fact that for many, many players, a natural part of the process, including Hall of Fame players that I've had come through our development system in the past, you know, a natural part of the process is, you know, to come up and then go back and then come back again and be ready that time.
Mickey Mantle got sent down after a month. I remember one thing Gillick said years and years ago. He said decisions are based on need. And right now, before the season starts, you don't really need to do anything, right? I mean, with a guy like Tellers or something. Now, a month into the season, if you have a black hole somewhere, then you have to kind of, you know, reshuffle the cards.
Yeah, and a lot of times then, you know, you've probably heard me say this before, and I tell players this all the time, the best decisions we make as a front office are the ones players make for us.
Sure.
So, you know, that they're making it for us. If they go out and it's absolutely clear, like, how can you guys, and you're saying this and your callers are saying it, how could you not bring that guy up? He's going off at AAA right now, and you're struggling at that spot in the big leagues. You know, those are decisions where, hey, it's crystal clear.
Well, the options are few at first base, I think you would acknowledge, at least for the time being. It looks like Justin Smoak is the option. Is there another one?
Steve Pierce.
But he's not ready. He's okay to play first base?
I think tomorrow he plays first base.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll see. Let me ask you this. Is if Pierce lands at first base, if he plays more often at first base, does that change the approach for left field? Because he's a candidate for that position as well.
I would look at the cast of people that factor into those decisions. Justin Smoak, Steve Pierce, you know, Melvin Upton, Ezekiel Carrera, you know.
Well, it's one first baseman and a whole bunch of outfielders.
Yeah, and again, I don't think there's any one set determination. Like, you adjust if Steve Pierce plays more first base than Justin Smoak, the other two guys are the primary choices in the outfield. If Smokey establishes himself, then, you know, clearly Pierce mixes and, you know, probably takes at bats away from those other guys in left field and may DH some. Kendrys Morales has played first three times down here as well. You know, he's looked good over there, both in practice and in the field. He played behind Eric Hosmer in Kansas City, who's probably the best defensive first baseman in the American League, so he wasn't going to play over Hosmer, and Hosmer is also one of the younger major league players, so he can play every day in the field. But again, Kendrys is a guy who could factor in at first as well. Not as an everyday guy, but certainly playing some there.
And Bautista played first base in the World Cup,
or a
classic, I should say.
Yeah, and Bautista, we know, can play the infield. He played third base a fair bit. Playing first base should be easy for him. The dilemma is who plays right field if Bautista plays first base. That's becomes a problem. Let me throw this one at you. A couple of years ago, Roberto Osuna came to camp as a 19-year-old or whatever he was that nobody knew anything about, and he kept pitching and impressing and impressing and impressing, and he was nowhere near the radar of management at the time, but he made the ball club. Is there one of those guys right now that you've looked at and said, there's a chance?
The only guy that probably wasn't on the radar coming in here in that way but has pitched with enough stuff down here and weapons that you'd say, if you could bottle that and if you could absolutely assure me that he could step on a major league mound during the season and pitch exactly like he's pitched down here, he absolutely would be a big part of a major league bullpen as a young guy named Tim Mazza, who you probably haven't heard of. But he's a lefty that's been, you know, sat in the mid-90s with a high 80s, you know, slider. And lefties have had zero chance, and righties haven't had much of a chance against him down here. So he's been impressive in the past. He's had some strike-throwing issues. He's always had power stuff. He's a guy that was debated and debated and debated as a roster protect decision, was probably the last guy that we did not protect off the roster. I'm looking at him down here going, thank God he didn't get taken, because he's really been good. So, you know, that would be one guy to kind of keep an eye on, again, because he's not on the roster now and because he hasn't done it, you know, at the major league level yet. You know, there's no reason to force that because, you know, Aaron Loop has thrown the ball extremely well down here. Some of the other, you know, some of the other veteran guys have also come in here and looked very good as well. And we've got to make decisions on Bo Schultz and not make mistakes on guys that are out of option, that have power arms. So I think you want to exhaust those with the guys where you don't have any options before you start, you know, rushing guys up here.
30 seconds. Any update on the future of Dunedin and your negotiations with the town?
big meeting on Wednesday with the county, Pinellas County.
Yeah.
Everything's progressing. You know, it's not an easy process. As I told you, it's cumbersome. It's a little, you know, I'm a little bit impatient with it, but I do feel like we continue to get positive feedback. We continue to make progress, and I think we will know a lot more by early summer.
Do you have a deadline?
I would say if by early summer we don't have at least confidence that, you know, a deal's moving forward, we'll start to look at alternatives. We probably won't close the door on Dunedin, but we'll start to be – and I've been very open about this. We have not done that to date. We've, you know, negotiated in earnest, you know, and exclusively with Dunedin, with the intent and with the hope that, you know, with we could just get a deal done here and not have to explore alternatives. I do know that sometimes to get a deal done, you got to have alternatives.
Yeah.
So hopefully in this case, that won't be the case.